Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Healthy Gut Podcast with Rebecca Coombs, the place where you can learn how to achieve a happy, healthy gut. Here's what's coming up on today's show. Hi, and welcome back to the Healthy Gut Podcast. Today, it's just me, and I am going to be sharing one of my first podcast coaching sessions. I went through my own journey with SIBO and realized that there were some key components to recovering from this chronic illness. And I developed the five key pillars to health. And they comprise of awareness, nutrition, movement, mindset, and lifestyle. I realized that I needed to focus on all of these things, and that really took me beyond just the physical treatment of my SIBO, because without addressing my awareness, my nutrition, my movement, my mindset, and my lifestyle, I really couldn't progress with recovering and returning to health. So on today's podcast, I'm going to be talking about the first key pillar to health, and that is awareness. Awareness is really important because it is really the starting point for many of us. And for some of us, it can take some time to get to this point where we're starting to become aware. So if we think about the things that we can become aware about, they can include our symptoms, our emotions, our thoughts, our surroundings, the condition of SIBO itself, and our other. I knew I needed to look at my exercise and my movement. I have talked many times over since starting the podcast around being an all or nothing kind of person. I'm either lying flat out on the couch or I'm training for a triathlon. I find it very difficult to be somewhere in between. And I also started looking at the substances I put on and in my body. Some of the easy things I started with were toothpaste, skincare, deodorant, then moved to shampoo and conditioner, body wash, face wash, my household cleaning ingredients. Because I realized that every single day I was exposing myself to thousands of different chemicals. And my body was telling me very clearly it was really overwhelmed. My gut had stopped working. And then I was expecting it to cope with all of these toxins as well. So I started to remove them one by one. And I took the things out that I felt had probably the biggest impact on my body. So things that came into direct contact with my skin. So natural deodorant and my skincare regime were the first things I looked at. Then I moved into my makeup. And then I moved into my shampoo and conditioner. And I would do this as I would swap out or as I'd run out of products. So I didn't go out and buy all of these things when I still had half-used items in my cupboards. I decided I was going to finish them off. I just didn't have the kind of disposable income to do it all at once. And I also didn't want to throw these things out and cause more waste. So I thought, no, I'll go and finish them off. And while I'm finishing them, I'll go and research some products that I would like to try and see if they work for me. And then from there, I started doing the household items such as my cleaning products, so the cleaning sprays, cleaning creams, the substances I use to wash my dishes in, put in the dishwasher, wash my clothes with, bleach my clothes, do the stain removing from my clothes. So I started to really expand out from there. And that's something that you can do as well as you start to become aware. One of the first places that is really handy for us to become aware is the condition itself, is for us to really understand SIBO and how it works. And I've done some amazing interviews over the past year with SIBO specialists, so I really recommend that you dive into those podcast recordings. Go and check out episode number 2 and 3 with Dr. Alison Seebecker, the queen of SIBO. She's treated thousands of patients with SIBO and she has such an in-depth knowledge of this condition. Also check out episode 59 with Dr. Mark Pimentel. He was on last week, so go back and listen if you haven't already listened, because he does talk about SIBO. But let's just touch on it briefly, because it really does help to become aware. So SIBO is one of the main causes of irritable bowel syndrome. And irritable bowel syndrome is the most common digestive complaint in the world. When they've studied people who have IBS, they see that it can be about, on average, 60% of those people have SIBO, and they believe the SIBO is what's causing their IBS. In one study, it was up to 84% of the participants. So SIBO is common, but it is still not commonly known about. Unfortunately, many of our primary healthcare practitioners, so I see these people as the first line of defense in our healthcare system. They're our general practitioners, our GPs, as we call them here in Australia, our MDs, as they're called in the States, the people you go to when you've got the common cough, cold, infection, or problem, and you want to go and see a doctor. Now, these doctors are busy people, and for many of them, when they went through their own university training, there just wasn't very much taught about the gut. The gut is really only coming out in prominence in more recent times. So don't be angry at these people for not knowing about SIBO. They just haven't caught up, or they don't have an interest in it. They might have an interest in another condition or another range of conditions, and that's where their focus lies. SIBO is common, it does affect many people, and it's also a condition that commonly relapses. So on average, about 2/3 of the population are going to have a relapse at some point. And only about 1/3 of these people remain free from SIBO after a round of treatment. And Dr. Alison Seebecker talks about the common relapse rates being 2 days, 2 weeks, and 2 months. And if we think about why relapse occurs, it is happening because we haven't addressed the underlying reason of why our small intestine stopped working properly. Now, I know for me, this took some time for me to really grasp this concept. I'd been sick for such a long time that when I discovered I had this thing called SIBO, to me, I felt like I'd reached the pinnacle. I'd reached the end of the line. That's all I needed to know. I didn't know that SIBO was really just a symptom of something else or multiple things going wrong in my body. The small intestine does not want to become impaired. It wants to work efficiently. It wants to flush the food and bacteria and all of that matter through and on to the large intestine. So when we have this bacterial overgrowth occurring in our small intestine, something or many things are going wrong. And in order to truly remain free from SIBO, we need to address them. Taking rounds of antibiotics or herbal antimicrobials or doing the elemental diet is really just a band-aid approach. You're really just attacking the overgrowth, but you're not attacking the underlying reason. I myself have experienced this firsthand. So I went through my first round of treatment 3 and a bit years ago now, and all I wanted to know about was just killing the little critters. I was so focused and fixated on killing the overgrowth. I didn't know that I needed to be looking at underlying causes. And those underlying causes are commonly a structural issue, or they're a motility issue, or they're both. And after clearing SIBO, I was so fatigued from thinking about my small intestine and taking pills and potions that I went on a complete vacation from everything. I just followed a more relaxed version of the SIBO biphasic diet. So I kept it reasonably low FODMAP, but not overly. And I just, you know, remained pretty healthy in my approach. But I just didn't want to think any more about my small intestine. Now, in that time, I then went on and launched the Healthy Gut business, learned a hell of a lot more about the gut, and discovered these things called adhesions. And I've learned that adhesions are a major piece in my puzzle. I am absolutely full of adhesions in my abdominal area and elsewhere in my body. And these adhesions are constricting my small intestine and my large intestine, so they're preventing both those parts of my intestinal system from working properly. And lo and behold, I have relapsed and my SIBO has returned. And it has returned because I have not, until very recently, started to address my adhesions. So if you are one of those people that have relapsed, or you've heard that relapse is high, don't be alarmed by it. Just go into this process going, okay, I'm aware that this is part of the picture for SIBO patients. I'm aware I need to look beyond the overgrowth to see what's going on. For many of us, we can resolve our symptoms quite significantly. But I think it's important to be aware that 100% resolution of symptoms may not be possible for you. And that's okay. Dr. Alison Seebecker talks about how it might be more like an 80 to 90% resolution. I would say that I sit at about 80 to 90% resolution from where I was. I tell you what, guys, that is still significantly better than where I've come from. So again, just touching quickly, again, this helps to build on our awareness of our condition. Let's touch quickly on SIBO and what's happening. And it's important to know that SIBO is an overgrowth of the normal bacteria that live within us. So it's not like it's an overgrowth of an infection or what might be known as pathogenic bacteria. It's just the critters that live normally within us. And instead of living in the large intestine or being flushed through, they've set up home in the small intestine. And that's because they haven't been flushed through. There's a motility issue. So for instance, our migrating motor complex, which is that sweeper wave that pushes everything through when we're not eating, it pushes the food through when we're in a fasting state. This might not be working properly. And I know for me, this is definitely a factor. There might also be structural issues. Like I said, adhesions are a big piece. We might have blind loop issues where we've got little kinks in our small intestine and bacteria can sit in these little pockets and they can flourish and have a wonderful time living in the small intestine. We might have issues with our ileocecal valve, and that's the valve between the large and the small intestine. So there's plenty of things that can occur. We might have also had some surgery. So you might have had a bowel resection. You might have had some parts of your bowel removed. You might have diseases. So you might have an inflammatory bowel disease. You may have cancer. You might have had appendicitis like I have, or endometriosis, also a condition that I have that can affect the structural integrity of the small intestine. So it acknowledged that there's only a couple of actual causes of SIBO, but then there's lots and lots of things that can lead to us developing those things. And that's where they're called risk factors. And we can have multiple risk factors occurring that lead us to developing a motility issue or a structural issue. And these can be things like food poisoning, gastro, parasite infections, regular use of proton pump inhibitors, excessive antibiotic use, not being breastfed as a child. So there's a whole range of things that we can go through that can then lead to the causes of SIBO. Now, for members of the Healthy Gut podcast, I've got a really handy causes and risk factors download that you can get to map your own journey through the various risk factors you may have been exposed to, through to causes, through to SIBO. So make sure, guys, that you are a member of the Healthy Gut podcast to get access to that. And all you need to do is put your name and email address on the show notes and you will get access for free for today's show notes, transcription, and this handy download. Let's talk a little bit about the migrating motor complex. Again, it's really important to be aware of this condition or this function that occurs in the body. So this is what's called the sweeper wave, and it occurs when we are fasting. So that means when we're not eating and not snacking. So it is active when we're asleep and in between meals. And this is why it is recommended as a general guideline for people with SIBO to spread their meals out as far as possible so that you allow the body to go into the migrating motor complex phase. And it occurs every 90 minutes when it's switched on, and it's really helping to sweep the food and bacteria and other things that are in your small intestine along and down into the large intestine. Now, there is a note here, guys, again, something else to be aware of, that whilst this is a general recommendation for SIBO patients to eat 3 meals a day, not to snack, and to leave 4 to 5 hours between each meal to support their migrating motor complex, this isn't ideal for everybody. For those of you that have lost a lot of weight, the first priority for you guys is actually to get back into a healthy weight range, because it's very difficult for your body to achieve optimal health if you are very undernourished and underweight. And when I've interviewed doctors for the podcast, and you can go back and listen, there's many episodes where I talk about this with them, they say the first priority is to get weight back on your frame, and then you can worry about the fasting between meals. So for those of you where this is an issue and you're thinking, oh, I'm so slim, I'm really uncomfortable at how slim I am, I feel too light, I feel like I need to put some more meat on my bones, you may need to snack. You may need to eat a fourth meal. You may need to eat more in your meals. And you may need to just focus on your fasting overnight. So for you, you might say, okay, well, I'm just going to fast from 8 p.m. until 8 a.m. That gives me a good 12-hour window every day, and I'm going to support my migrating motor complex with a prokinetic. So again, part of the awareness piece is taking the information about our condition on board and then looking at what's suitable for you. Understanding our symptoms is also part of becoming aware of our condition. Understanding our symptoms with SIBO is an important part of being aware. And our symptoms are generally caused by gases from our bacteria, which are fermenting the carbohydrates and the food that we're eating. Our small intestine can become damaged from these gases, and that can lead to an immune system response where the immune system is activated because food particles and other things are crossing the gut lining into the bloodstream, and the immune system's then going, hey, who are you? You're not supposed to be here. And they're coming in and attacking, thinking it's a foreign invader. So some of the common symptoms that we might see and for us to be aware of are things like bloating, pain, constipation, diarrhea, or a swinging between diarrhea and constipation and back again. We can become intolerant or sensitive to foods and chemicals found in foods. we might find ourselves feeling very gassy at both ends or just one end. Nausea is common. Heartburn and acid reflux is common. We can also feel incredibly fatigued. We can have brain fog. We might see things occurring on our skin. So we might have rashes or disturbances coming up on our skin. We might find ourselves quite deficient in vitamins and nutrients and minerals. And this is often because we're not absorbing these things well from the small intestine. We can also find ourselves with respiratory issues such as asthma or breathing difficulties. And there can be a connection between brain and mood symptoms. So anxiety, depression, brain fog, and also autism. So as we're becoming aware of our condition, understanding what these symptoms are and what we experience is really important. Today, guys, I've got my really handy food and mood diary to share with you. Again, this is for members of the Healthy Gut podcast, so make sure that you have signed up to become a member. It's absolutely free. On my food and mood diary, all you need to do is write down what you've been eating and how you feel. And we look at both your digestive symptoms, but also the broader symptoms like, what's your emotional state like? Are you feeling anxious? Are you feeling depressed? Are you feeling happy? What are you feeling like? That's a good question, hey? I've got loads more just like this coming up after this break. We'll be back in a moment.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
On my food and mood diary, all you need to do is write down what you've been eating and how you feel. And we look at both your digestive symptoms, but also the broader symptoms like, what's your emotional state like? Are you feeling anxious? Are you feeling depressed? Are you feeling happy? What are you feeling like? And it can really help you to put a picture together of how you're currently going. Now, I find the food and mood diary really beneficial for people that are just starting out on their SIBO journey, but it's also really useful for those of you that have been dealing with this for a while. We can often think, hey, I've got this. I know what this is all about. I don't need anybody to tell me what my symptoms are. I know my symptoms. But when I work with my coaching clients on this and they go away and they fill this out for a week, they'll often come back to me and they'll say, you know, Rebecca, I had absolutely no idea that this food X, Y, and Z was actually causing symptoms. And I didn't realize until I started to write down what I was eating and how I was feeling that every time I ate this food, I then got a headache or I got stomach cramps or I had to run to the toilet because I had diarrhea. So it's really beneficial no matter where you are in your phase, and it can be a really great support to kind of get back to basics. For many of us, the first step of becoming aware is learning about the treatment options. And it's understandable. We really want to get rid of this overgrowth. Now we know what it is. We want it gone and we want to deal with this as quickly as possible. So it's important for us to know what we have available to us, but also for us to be aware of the additional things that we generally need to do in our life to overcome this chronic and often long-term condition. So again, I've got interviews that I've done with previous doctors about SIBO treatment, so go back and listen to them. But just to touch on it, we've got antibiotics, we've got herbal antibiotics, and we've also got the elemental diet. And those three things are the key things that are being used by practitioners today to treat the SIBO overgrowth in the small intestine. Dr. Alison Seebecker and Dr. Steven Sandberg-Lewis put together a SIBO treatment algorithm. And you can head to the show notes page and go and have a look at that. And it can help you to determine whether you have used all of the available options to you when it comes to treatment. A fourth component for treatment is often diet. So there are several diets that can be followed, and these are designed to help control symptoms. At this point in time, they don't believe that the diet itself is able to cure SIBO. And again, if we think about what's occurring with SIBO, there is a structural issue or a motility issue that is occurring to allow the bacteria to overgrowth. So this is why diet is not seen as a cure rather than as a symptom controller, because diet alone is not going to impact your structural issues or your motility issues. A key thing to remember, guys, about the diet is that these have been developed to be a guide. They're not like a Bible that should be followed strictly. Every single person is unique. Your microbiome is unique to you. So the food that your bacteria that live within you need is different from person to person. And I know it can be really frustrating where you just want somebody to tell you exactly what to do and that you follow that. But here's the thing about becoming aware. As we learn about ourselves, we learn about our condition, and we learn about our nutrition, understanding what works for you and what doesn't work for you is a really key factor. I'm seeing a huge amount of fear around food, and it absolutely breaks my heart. Food is not the enemy. Yes, it can make us feel sick, but it is not the energy. It is not the enemy. It provides us with energy and nutrition, and it is going to be what helps us to heal. So look at the diets that are available and then modify them to yourself. If you can eat something that isn't included on a diet, but you feel absolutely fine with it, eat it. That's fine. Dr. Alison Seebecker has joined me on my SIBO coaching program webinars, and we've talked about this very thing. And she said, you know what? If you can eat that food, go for it. If it doesn't cause symptoms, then go for it. So the types of diets that you can follow are the SIBO Specific Food Guide by Dr. Alison Seebecker, which then led to the SIBO Biphasic Diet by Dr. Narala Jacoby, and she took the SIBO Specific Food Guide and put it into phases. So if you like structure and rules and guidelines, then this diet can be really good for you. The low FODMAP diet is also an option for people who want to be able to play around with their food, who like having flexibility. It uses a color code system. So green means low FODMAP, amber means higher FODMAP, and red means much higher FODMAP. And again, my concern with any diet protocol that uses red, amber, and green is that we know through our traffic light system that red means stop. Red often means danger. Red means avoid. These foods aren't bad foods. They're just higher in FODMAPs, and they're foods that you should hopefully be able to eat again in the future. So be mindful, be aware of the diets and how they've been structured. And if you find yourself having these kind of negative conversations of, oh, I must never eat that food because it's bad, let's say honey, for instance, that is red on the FODMAP diet because it's a high FODMAP food. But honey in and of itself isn't bad. Now, if you've got a fructose issue and you can't absorb or digest fructose well, then yeah, honey is something that is going to be difficult for you and you may never be able to introduce it. But honey is not a bad food. So just think about how you're approaching the wording in your own head and how you speak to others about foods. The Cedars-Sinai diet, which is a low fermentation diet, is another option for people, as is the specific carbohydrate diet and the fast track diet. So guys, there's heaps of options out there for you. When it comes to picking a diet, the key is pick one and stick with it and then modify from there. What I see many people do, and we're going to dive more into nutrition on the nutrition coaching podcast, which is coming up in just a few weeks. But what I see people do is they download all of the diets, they print them all out, and then they try to marry them all together. And they literally drive themselves insane because on one diet, one food's allowed. On one diet, that same food is not allowed. So don't drive yourself insane. I've been there, done it. Got the photo. You will do yourself more harm emotionally and psychologically by trying to coordinate a million diets than if you just pick one and work from there. And like I said, remember, diets are there to control the symptoms or ease symptoms. They're not there to cure SIBO. And they are to be modified. They are a guide. So use them as that. And also, guys, these diets are not a long-term solution. Remember, if you think about what's happening, if we get SIBO, we have a motility or a structural issue. We need to be addressing that in order to be moving forward with our health and recovering from SIBO. So if all we're doing is staying on a very restricted diet for a very long amount of time, all we're doing is restricting the fuel that our bacteria get because we pull back on these higher FODMAP foods, which our broader microbiome actually needs. And we can actually be making ourselves sicker in the long run because we can be killing off bacterial groups, whole colonies of bacteria that literally starved because we didn't give them the fuel they needed. And then our large bowel can become compromised. So we need to think about the bigger picture. If you're struggling with the nutrition component, I do recommend working with a nutritionist or a dietitian who is experienced in digestive health, and they can work with you to develop a specific nutrition protocol that is suitable for you. I often get asked about retesting and whether we should be retesting. Now, Dr. Seebecker talks about if you have gone, and Dr. Pimentel, if you have gone through a round of treatment and you've seen a significant improvement in your symptoms, then they won't necessarily retest you. But if you've gone through a round of treatment and you're not feeling any better, or you're only having a very small improvement in your symptoms, it may well be worth retesting to see whether you have made any impact on the overgrowth through the treatment, or whether they need to be considering other things. I myself have approached retesting in the sense of I was first tested for SIBO 3 years ago. I then went through treatment for 6 months. I felt great, but I wanted to know. So I chose to retest because I wanted to see the results. I'm someone that loves facts and figures, and I wanted to see whether I had actually reduced the overgrowth, which I had. I then decided not to retest until I started to feel a big surge of symptoms return, and I wanted to check whether I had hydrogen dominant SIBO or methane dominant SIBO, because I knew that depending on what type of SIBO I had determined the treatment that I would follow. And so that's why I retested, but I haven't retested again. I'm going off my symptoms, and I'm also very conscious that I need to do a lot of work around the rest of my health, including these adhesions and having them treated. And so I'm taking a much longer term, broader view of my recovery from SIBO this time around. Another aspect to become aware of are your thoughts and your behaviours. I'll tell you what's really common with SIBO people when they first get diagnosed. First off, it's relief. We are so relieved to finally know what has been going on, because for so many of us, this has been an issue for us for years. I don't hear from many people that have only been unwell for a few weeks or a few months. Most people say to me, I have been dealing with this for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years or more. So we are relieved beyond belief that we now have a name and a diagnosis. And then we become obsessed. We want to learn everything that's ever been published, that's ever been written or spoken about when it comes to SIBO. We throw ourselves into the online communities. We read every blog that's ever been published, regardless of whether they're actually valid or not. And we become obsessed. We want to talk about it to everyone that will listen. We look around us. We realize our friends and our family and our colleagues all probably have SIBO. And we feel like we have the elixir to life. We become very internally focused. We're so aware and focused on what's going on in our bodies, we can sometimes forget to live. And this is understandable because our symptoms can become all-consuming and controlling. But if we're not careful, we can find ourselves being a shell of the person we once were. We can find ourselves not going out, not socializing, becoming very anxious, very depressed, and very worried about the future. We totally forget to live life. So we need to become aware of this. How are we feeling? How are we living? So some tips I've got on what to do when the aware is problematic, as I call it, is we need to do something that takes our complete focus. I utilize post-traumatic stress disorder techniques to help me with this. Having had a near-death diving accident where I was scuba diving and I lost consciousness underwater after nearly suffocating / drowning, I came back to Australia after that trip and I found myself with pretty bad PTSD. And my psychologist at the time taught me some techniques to manage those times when I was in a really bad PTSD flare. And that would be where I would be feeling like I was underwater and I was drowning. Now, that was pretty extreme because I nearly died, but we can find ourselves in this zone when we have SIBO, and that is when we are just obsessing about it. We might be waiting for symptoms to occur because we've eaten something we haven't tried before and we're literally like, is it coming? Is the symptom coming? Is that bloating? Was that bloating? I don't know. Is it bloating? I think it might be bloating. I don't know. Is my belt buckle getting a bit tighter? Maybe my trousers are getting tight. I think my trousers are getting tight. Is my trousers getting tight? If you've done this, you know that routine. I did that a lot. So guys, get up. Do something completely different. So a PTSD strategy is to, you've got to change your brain and your body completely from what you're doing. So generally I would be sitting still or lying in bed and just going over and over and over again, the accident and then my SIBO in later times. So I would get up, I'd go and jump on the spot or do, you know, star jumps or jumping jacks, whatever you call them. I would put on a song and sing loud, like really, really loud. You want to do something that takes your complete and utter focus away from the worrying that you're doing. So you've got to change the way you are being physically and also mentally. I also find going out and moving my body, so maybe going for a swim or going out for a walk with the dog, even just going and standing outside, looking up to the sky, looking at the trees, hopefully you've got some birds flying around, you can watch them, or even going up to a plant and inspecting all of the little critters that are living on it. Do something that takes your complete and utter focus away. And that helps to break that cycle where your awareness is actually problematic, where you are just going into a deep, dark hole of nervousness and fear. I love the online support groups that are there. There are some really big support groups on Facebook. But I had to become aware that some of those groups were actually causing me to become more anxious. You can go onto those Facebook groups and find every single problem that every single SIBO person has ever had because people are really quick to share the problems. What you don't see is as many highlights. Because people, it's human nature, just don't share the positives as much as we share the negatives. I'm an empath, which means that I really feel for people. I feel other people's emotions very strongly. And I would get onto these Facebook groups and I felt so overwhelmed emotionally by all the things that the people were posting. Now, at that moment in time, that person feels those things. They're feeling really down in the dumps. But it doesn't mean you have to take on the burden of their problems. So, or Facebook groups, a lot of time in those chat rooms, just check yourself. Is it helping or hindering you? Another thing that I've got to help you guys with your awareness is around meal planning. When we are organized and we have our meals set out for a couple of days, or even if you're really organized, like I like to be, for the week ahead, it can take the stress and anxiety out of this condition because it helps us to feel confident and calm that we've got the food sorted. It can also help us to ensure that we have got the diversity back in our nutrition. Remember, guys, diversity is key. We want to be eating as many different plant-based foods as we can possibly eat because that feeds the broader microbiome, and that is what will ultimately be helping to get us well again. So another thing, I've got so many handy tools for you guys from today's podcast. Another thing for those of you that sign up for the podcast as a member, I've got my handy meal planning handout for you. So you can write down your breakfasts, lunches, dinners, snacks, drinks, desserts if you eat them for the week ahead so you can be really organized. Another thing we need to be aware of is that for many of us, we need to pull together a dream team of health professionals to help us get well. I wish that every single medical practitioner out there in the world knew absolutely everything about every condition. But guys, they don't. They're human. They're just like us. So we need to take responsibility and ownership for our health back into our hands. And we need to find the right dream team of health professionals that will help us get well. And for many of us, this means we need several. I have a whole variety of people on my dream team that I call upon as I need them. And some of the people that I work with are my GP, so my primary care doctor, who I work with for general tests and if I ever need kind of mainstream medical support. I have my naturopath, who works with me on my SIBO and then my kind of general health as well. And I go to her first before I go to the GP as a general rule. I work with a psychologist who works with me on my mindset and helping me to overcome the traumas in my life. I have a personal trainer that works with me on my movement, helping me to keep strong. I go to a back rehabilitation clinic and they help me to rehab my back after discovering that I have a disc issue and that was causing a lot of pain. I have an osteopath who keeps me somewhat, and I want to be more flexible and out of pain. I work with a nutritionist at times when I feel like I need that extra support. And even someone like myself, guys, I love food. I'm passionate about food. It's my everything, but I still work with someone who has extra qualifications in this area. And then I know I'll keep adding to my dream team as new things evolve, new things that I need. So you're in control of your health. And it's important for us to be aware of where we put that control and responsibility. If we are constantly looking outwards, looking for others to come up with the solutions to solve our problems, then it's going to be very difficult for us to ultimately regain full and lasting health. You don't have to be perfect at this and you don't need to know everything, but it is your body and you are in control of it. You control your thoughts, you control your behaviors, and you control your attitudes. You also control who is in your dream team. So if you have a doctor or a medical practitioner that you don't feel is right, you have the power to change that. You have the power to find somebody else that is more suitable. We are going to experience setbacks along this journey, and with setbacks comes learning. I now look at all my setbacks and think, I'm really glad that I went through that because I learnt so much. An analogy I like to use with my coaching clients is that if we were children or babies and we learnt to walk on the first time we stood up, we would not learn as much as we do from all the times that we fall over and bump our bodies and fall on the ground. Think of your SIBO journey exactly like that. See the opportunity to learn with every setback or bump that you experience in your journey. Now, to finish today's podcast off, I want to play a call that I received from somebody that has been dealing with SIBO for a long period of time. Now, I don't want this to be fearful for you because Lisa, who left a message for me, has been dealing with SIBO for a long time. But again, I see that it's important that we are aware of what can happen. And I'll make some comments at the end of Lisa's call. So thanks, Lisa, for joining us today on the podcast and taking the time to share your own experience with us.
Hi there. My name is Lisa Stevenson, and I live in Auckland, New Zealand. I thought I was alone with my symptoms and awful body reactions, but I have realised through various SIBO support groups that there are so many out there like me. People who have tried so many things over an extended period of time. The diets, SCD, Elemental Diet, Paleo, Low FODMAP, Fast Track, Biphasic, all the antimicrobials, prokinetics, healing herbs, minerals, vitamins, colostrum, L-glutamine, Restore, greens powders, detoxes, colonics, fecal transplants, activated charcoal, mast cell stabilizers, homeopathics, parasite cleansers, visceral massage, Chinese medicine, meditation, yoga, and so many tests, breath tests, skin tests, colonoscopies, gastroscopies, pill cam studies, ultrasounds, CT scans, blood work, stool testing, hormone testing, heavy metal testing, food panels, etc. Before treatment with all of these things, I never reacted to food like I do now. I never had extreme flushing, itching and burning like I do now. I never reacted to all the scents and smells like I do now. Now I react to salicylates, histamines and oxalates. I didn't even know what these were before. I have fat malabsorption, stools that are always green or yellow, but I have no diarrhea, only constipation. I feel like there are so many practitioners out there specialising in SIBO, IBS, leaky gut. But where are the ones looking at what can happen to a certain percentage of population who have been on all of these treatments for extended periods of time and have become so much worse? Maybe treatments need to be looked at more carefully and studies done. Maybe for some of us, these treatments are really harmful and toxic, especially if they are ongoing. I feel like we are the forgotten ones, the too hard basket ones. I have spent over $70,000 so far on practitioners, testing and treatments, and I am so much worse than I was 7 years ago. Maybe it's time to really look at what all of these antimicrobials are doing to some of us, the effect on our microbiomes. Maybe there needs to be more research done on these products, especially if practitioners are not putting good things back in to balance all of the killing effects that these herbs and antibiotics cause. I would also love to see practitioners look at their fee schedules. It doesn't seem fair to me that some are charging outrageous amounts while we become sicker and sicker. It would be nice to think that others weren't profiting off of our misfortune.
Thanks, Lisa, so much for taking the time to share your experience. And I do think it's really important that those of us that are perhaps a little earlier in our journeys are aware that we can end up worse off than when we started, as Lisa has. Now, this doesn't happen for everybody. I think it's important to know that Lisa is what I'd consider a small minority group of SIBO patients, but nonetheless, she is really important. We are in our absolute infancy when it comes to understanding the gut, and I know that in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, 50 years' time, we will look back at the way we manage SIBO and other conditions like it and probably shake our heads and think, why did we do it like that? This is the challenge with medicine. We only know what we know. And so our doctors today are desperately trying to help patients. Doctors want to help patients to feel well again. They're not going out of their way to make patients feel worse, but they're limited with the toolkit that they currently have. And so at this point in time, guys, our doctors have a range of different things they can use, but is that ultimately going to be the best thing ever as we know it in the future? Probably not, but it's what we've got today. So do take into consideration the treatment options that are offered to you. And remember, guys, you are in control of your health. If it doesn't sit well with you, then you have the right to say, I would like a second opinion, or I would like to do some more research on whether this is right for me. Remember, taking all of these medications is like putting a Band-Aid on a cut. We are treating the symptom rather than the underlying cause. You may like to do what I'm doing right now, which is rather than taking a whole heap of killing agents to kill the overgrowth, I'm actually treating the broader microbiome. So I am trying to improve the diversity of my large bowel, and I'm having my adhesions addressed, rather than just taking month after month after month of killing agents to kill the overgrowth, because I am also very concerned around what I am doing to my broader microbiome every single time I take something to kill the SIBO overgrowth. Lisa has made a comment about the cost. And a part of being aware of SIBO and our condition is being aware that it does cost money for us to do this. I'm so sorry, Lisa, that you think you've tallied it up to be about $70,000. That's a lot of money to be trying to regain your health and not to be feeling any better for it. I have spent tens of thousands of dollars as well on my own health. We are paying for the education and the expertise and skills of our medical practitioners. Depending on where you are in the world, depends on how much money you have to pay for your medical treatment. I know there are people in the US that have to pay a lot even though they have medical insurance. Here in Australia, when it comes to alternative health, we still have to pay. We're not covered by our health insurance either. So it can be very, very costly. But these people have gone to university, they have studied under their medical qualifications, and they are ultimately trying to do the best thing. They've got their patients' best interests at heart. So I am sorry that you have spent so much money, Lisa, and that you have not ultimately achieved the outcome yet that you are after. But I do think it is fair that we do pay our medical practitioners for their time, their expertise, and their service. But again, guys, this is up to you. You have the right to choose who you see and where you spend your money. And you may find that it's better to spend your money elsewhere for this point in time. If you are signed up to a doctor that is forcing you to pay things, then I think you need to really question whether that doctor is right for you. But remember, guys, doctors ultimately go to medical school because they want to help people. They're not there. And I know that, you know, every now and then we might see something in the news where someone is not the best doctor, but they are such a tiny, tiny minority out of the thousands, hundreds of thousands of doctors that are out there in the world who are ultimately trying to help people lead healthy and happy lives. So there you go, guys. That is the first key pillar in health awareness. And I hope you've enjoyed today. There's a whole heap of handouts that you can get by listening to today's show and becoming a Healthy Gut member, which you can do absolutely for free. All you need to do to get today's show notes is head to thehealthygut.co/awarenesspodcast, and that's all one word. And you'll get the show notes from today, and you'll see the opportunity to become a member of the Healthy Gut. All you need to do is add your name and email address. You will immediately receive an email welcoming you as a member, and you will get access to the full transcription from today and also all of those handy hints and downloads that I have shared with you. And just as a reminder, those things are the SIBO causes and risk factors handout, so you can track your own causes and risk factors. The food and mood diary, so you can track your symptoms with what you're eating. And also my weekly meal planner, so you can be super organized and plan your week's foods ahead so you can feel in control and not worrying about what you're going to be eating. I look forward to coming to you next week, and I will be sharing with you my interview with Rachel Fresco from Biobotanical Research. We're going to be talking about some of the products that she has developed, which are having a great success rate with SIBO patients. So join me next week with Rachel Fresco, and we'll be talking about some new supplements and some herbal protocols that you might like to consider following for your own SIBO treatment. You've been listening to the Healthy Gut Podcast with your host, Rebecca Coombs. To learn more about the Healthy Gut or our podcast, head to thehealthygut.co/podcast. We would like to thank Red Lemon Productions for the production and original music score of this podcast. To find out more about their services, head to redlemonproductions.com. The Healthy Gut Podcast is a production of The Healthy Gut. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.